You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. This week, we're continuing the feast that we started last week. But wait, have you eaten peanuts, cashews, hazelnuts, kiwi fruit, or shellfish in the last 24 hours? It's an important question for Danny Stewart.
They say it's the people you love who can hurt you the most. Well, you could also say when you live with life-threatening allergies, it's the food you love that hurts you the most. When I was studying abroad in India, one of my favourite foods almost killed me. Dal is one of my favourite dishes, a heavenly blend of lentils, onion, garlic, paprika, turmeric, and ginger. On the day the university organised for us to go to the Taj Mahal, dal almost killed me. We had a fancy lunch beforehand. Hey, do you reckon that has nuts in it?
I don't know. Maybe you should check.
It's probably fine. It just looks like dal. An hour after lunch, we were at the Taj Mahal. We went through security, then we walked through the archway. And there it was, a monumental mausoleum made of white marble. It looks completely white in photos, but close up, it's actually a mosaic of bright gemstones. It was an extraordinary scene, but I was starting to feel not all that extraordinary. I felt hot and tingly and kind of itchy. Maybe I'd gotten bitten by some bugs. Maybe I was just so overwhelmed by the beauty of the Taj Mahal, my excitement was manifesting physically. Then the cramp started. I'd never had an allergic reaction this severe, so I had no idea what was going on. I went to the bathroom because, well, I thought it could be Delhi Belly. There was a huge line of tourists,
but I just pushed
to the front.
Excuse me, can I get through? Excuse me.
This was an emergency. Finally, I reached the toilet, but nothing. I went to wash my hands and looked up at the mirror. My face was so swollen, my eyes were reduced to slits. I suddenly had the lips people pay thousands of dollars for and some not so hot hives. I found my way back to the group and told the professor that my immune system seemed to be confused and was attacking itself. He looked very concerned. It was suddenly hard to stand. My knees buckled. I leaned against a fire hydrant and propped myself up. Didn't want to believe that delicious curry had done this to me. The professor called over another student with allergies. She took one look at my face and said I was going into anaphylaxis and needed my EpiPen. So naturally, everyone asked,
"Where's your EpiPen?"
I left it on the bus. But guys, it's not that bad. I just need to have a rest. I'm so fine. When I was at school, my photo was in the staff room. Next to my photo was a chart of the stages of an allergic reaction. It went from mild to severe. As I sat there in the gutter next to the Taj Mahal, I started checking off each stage in my head.
Itchy mouth, throat and lips.
Check.
Hives. Swelling of lips, eyes and face.
Check.
Abdominal cramps.
Check.
Limpless.
Check.
Weakness.
Check.
And confusion.
Check. Wait, what?
Uh-oh.
I'd never had symptoms this far down the chart before. I thought maybe I should just accept my fate at this point. The Taj Mahal is a pretty nice place to die. It's very peaceful. What happened next is kind of a blur. The cramping was so bad, it was hard to walk. I remember a whole lot of yelling and pointing at my swollen face. One of the university staff rushed my classmate and I into a rickshaw. We somehow got back to the bus.
Okay, where's your bag? You need your EpiPen.
I was still breathing well enough, so I didn't want to use my EpiPen. When I was a kid, I was taught how to use an EpiPen on an orange. I have never had to use it on myself, but I remember the long, thick needle, and I was scared. If you use it, you need to go to hospital, and I didn't want to do that. I wasn't sure if my insurance covered anaphylaxis, so I took some antihistamine instead. About 10 minutes later, my symptoms settled. I went back to the Taj Mahal and met up with my classmates.
Haha, guys, remember 10 minutes ago when we thought I was dying?
That was really scary. Not funny.
I felt pretty bad about causing so much medical melodrama, but everyone forgot about it pretty quickly. On the bus ride back, we discovered that I wasn't the only victim of that fancy restaurant. The chosen ones had deli belly, and they spent the night hooked up to a drip. I'm extremely lucky that my allergic reaction stopped just short of my throat swelling, and I lived to see another day. Allergies can make for some great stories to tell at parties, but they can be some serious stuff.
Allergies, allergies, something's living on my skin. Doctor, please, open up.
That story was by Danny Stewart. The supervising producer was Erin Dick. All the Best exists because we want emerging Australian storytellers to learn how to make audio stories. You can start by pitching to us from any part of Australia and we'll pair you with one of our supervising producers. Email contact@allthebestradio.com. The food we make does more than just fill our bellies. It tells the story of the places we've been. In our last story, we're going around the world in a series of meals.
Feasts by Rain Collins. Feast 1, Thornbury, Melbourne. Chicken braised in apple cider and thyme. Potato mash with apple and cream. Whiskey and cider. One last meal together, I'd texted. The words were not easy to write, but I sent them anyway. I moved the instruments aside to lay out plates. A double bass leaning against the chip tiles. A banjo on a stool. This ramshackle sharehouse held songs and stories, but my contribution was coming to an end. We knew why we were gathered. We didn't need to speak about it. The music was raucous, and we sang as I crushed peppercorns and cracked ice cube trays. I was proud of my recipe and chopped the thyme carefully, folding cream into the pale mash. A dash of pungent cider for the bowl, and a dash for my glass. I felt every inch the domestic goddess as my man, my sister, and her boyfriend readied the scene behind me. They spooned salt into tiny arcs of china and sent sulphur sparks flying as the candles came to life. Such an intimate process, all wanting to nourish each other in the time we had left. The conversation abated as appetites ran rampant. The clink of cutlery was all the reassurance that this chef needed. Sated, we gazed at each other in silence. And then one by one, we raised our plates to run a tongue around the dish and laugh at our gluttony. The cider bottles were upended over greedy glasses, begging for one more drink to keep the night going. The boys were sent on a midnight whiskey run and returned as heroes. The sisters needed baselines and moved the kitchen chairs aside. I felt the funk pulsing through the rotting floorboards and followed its beat, never taking my eyes off my people, trying to commit every movement, every morsel, and every moment to memory. Feast 2, New York City. Steamed greens with soba noodles and marinated tempeh. Cornbread and brown rice gravy. Apple cider with honey. I had a clear view of the streets of the Lower East Side, perfect entertainment for a lone diner. On the tabletop lay a torn Raymond Carver book, perfect protection for a lone traveller. More and more I'd become immersed in a book to insulate myself against social interaction. Are you waiting for someone? Your accent's super cute. What do your tattoos mean? A month into my journey, I just couldn't find my travelling legs, and I was stumbling. Often. I missed Melbourne with the fierceness that appalled me. My mind was tethered to a shabby Thornbury house with broken locks, Nick Cave posters, and the one I loved. Travel takes on a whole new meaning when the ticket is one way. When the life that you know is being traded for one that you can only imagine. One that holds no one known to you, but yourself. The lessons were coming slowly, but they were still coming. I now knew that springtime in New York brought unexpected bursts of golden sunshine, that the thrum of traffic from my fire escape perch sang a song of comfort through the night, that solitude could also be intoxicating in its freedom. I wasn't yet able to skip on my travelling legs, but I knew I would eventually. This dawned on me the night I sought out Angelica's kitchen. The nourishment of dining alone in a new land and a new skin was unmistakable. The gentle blur of customers' conversations and laughter was punctuated by the creak of the kitchen door swinging open. The rainbow of colours displayed by the food entranced me, the vibrant green of the leaves and the caramel flakes of the cornbread. I paused to admire it for so long that the waiter hovered, one eyebrow raised in concern. And as I picked up my fork, I realized that for the first time on my travels, I was ravenously hungry. Feast 3, Brussels. Salad of cos lettuce, goat's cheese, juniper berries and bacon. Black cherry beer. Heitenkast mit Kapurches in Norflok. What the hell? There were no Kapurches in my dictionary. I knew Kast meant cheese, but what the hell was Heitenkast? Damn it, I was hungry. I just wanted to eat. I usually love buying food in my local Flemish supermarket, reveling in the way the language burned the back of my throat. If I couldn't translate a word, I would switch to French, the other language of this bewitching bilingual city. I loved the walk over cobblestones, lined by narrow, slanted houses, their medieval stones glowing in the sunlight. I often caressed the alley cats and crooned my secret names for them. But some days, my tail slunk low. I hadn't found a job yet, or a friend. I just wanted to fill my basket and get home. I spilled my bags onto my narrow kitchen table and put some urethra on to keep me company. Every time I cooked there, I lost myself in daydreams of who else had prepared meals in this medieval kitchen. What did they cook here hundreds of years ago? And what loved ones were they nourishing? There was such satisfaction in tearing apart the head of a lettuce, even if it was just for myself. I dropped ripe little juniper berries into the bowl. Aretha's voice rose in volume as the bacon began popping in the pan. My spirits began to rise also. I realized with a smile that Heitenkast meant goat's cheese. But it wasn't until the next day that I found Kapurches at Capers. The black cherry beer hissed as it was poured into a goblet. With arms full, I climbed the stairs to my bedroom. I never tired of the view from my window. I sat there most nights, admiring the way the light played on the rooftops of Brussels. The bells of the Notre-Dame du Sablon Church rang out the hours, as they'd done for 500 years. I smiled at how the sun in my beer glass turned the liquid a warm, rich ruby color. I paused to toast the city that I'd chosen, so far away from all that I'd known. And with my glass raised, I realized I was also toasting myself. Feast 4. Darwin. Prawns marinated in lime juice and lemongrass. Salad of watermelon, brie, and mint. Bottles of Semillon Sauvignon Blanc. Lightning tore the sky apart every evening at 7. Feet propped up on the balcony railing, we could count the moments between the thunder that made us flinch and the lightning that made us gasp. The rich purple of the sky looked like royal velvet, shot through with silver thread. I'd never seen anything like it. The scents were astonishing also. Frangipani and hibiscus swam around fragrant coconut oil, percolating in the humid air of Darwin in the wet season. I'd fervently believed that medieval cobblestones and Flemish dialects held my future. But it had taken me less than a year to realize otherwise. Although I loved Brussels, I did not belong there. The desire for people who knew me, for red earth and rainforest, had woken me at night, and so I booked my ticket home. The man I had left behind in Melbourne was no longer mine, his Thornbury door now closed to me. But there would be other loves, other faces to hold and eyelids to kiss. Now I knew where to look. My sister and I spent the last night in Darwin in the kitchen, scooping watermelon into balls and chopping mint. The parents were swept into the lounge room and gazed lovingly on as their girls fought over song choice and knife technique, the middle child and the baby. The day had been spent floating in a tropical waterhole, keeping watch for crocodiles as the sun splayed out from palm tree leaves. We were joyously tired and seriously hungry, ready for a family meal on a trip organized to celebrate my return. We ate on the balcony. The seared prawns were tangy with lime juice, the brie hot and oozing as it melted amongst the wetness of the watermelon. The wine left the faintest trail of honey as it washed down. We sat in silence afterwards, breathing in the heady scents of the night air. It smelled like coconut and jasmine, mixed with my dad's aftershave. It smelled like home. Feast 6. Spotswood, Melbourne. Gingerbread crusted salmon steaks. Scalloped potatoes with fresh dill. Vodka. 3 days of preparation and still we're not ready to eat. The smell is incredible though. The cinnamon and cloves waft through the house as I pour myself a vodka. Making proper gingerbread from scratch, the sort you could build a small house with, so the recipe tells me, it takes time. The food in this Polish cookbook takes effort too, grinding the spices in a mortar and pestle, kneading dough until my hands ache. I once spent 2 hours preparing little hooves with crispy bacon and sage that were eventually swept into the bin with a howl of defeat. You grinned at that. My temper is not new to you, though many other things are. The Polish cookbook is your first Christmas present to me, marking our second month of living together. I have never loved cooking more than for you and your son. Our new kitchen has stained glass windows showing the backyard trumpet lilies that are also tattooed in a rich red swirl down my arm. A good sign, I whisper at the house inspection. Rubber snakes in the garden make me beam and pinch your arm to point them out. Tonight I will bake the gingerbread that's rested for 3 days. I will crumble it, hot and aromatic, between my fingers, then roll salmon chunks in it to fry. You and Caleb will sit on the couch, books open in your lap, hunger building as sizzles spit from the kitchen. You both read, Caleb's head resting on your shoulder. My taxidermy lines the shelves next to our books. My enormous snow goose watching us all from a hook in the ceiling. The window lets in the sounds of the suburbs, a droning lawnmower and romping dogs. I don't know it yet, but I will cook hundreds of meals for us in this kitchen. Our house will fill over the years with more books, Smith sing-alongs, and a tiny pet snake who will charm us by falling asleep in our laps. I will take you to Brussels on our honeymoon and stand outside my old house to show you the window where I ate goat's cheese and dreamed of finding my way. I will squeeze your hand as I tell you the story, the rubies in my wedding ring catching the sun. Then I will take you out for dinner. We'll eat in a 400-year-old cellar on the stunning town square. We will order the Vardazoi I love, fresh rabbit stew with thyme. Eat smakelijk, I'll tell you, the Dutch version of Bon Appetit. We will add our story to the multitude of others etched into the rough wooden benches. We will raise our glasses and clink them. Together, we will feast.
Rayne Collins wrote and read this story. Original music and sound compositions by Suzanne Derry. The supervising producer was Jordan Fennell. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com and subscribe to our podcast.